Hi guys, got some bad news today. Ian couldn't be with us today, so it's just going to be me solo. It's going to be a solo album by Dave this week, and I'm sorry, Ian's had some bad news and is just going through some stuff. So he just could felt he could not do the show this week. He needed to spend some time with Pia, and I just want to say that I do wish he was here with me so that I could give him a big hug, but he's not. So I'm just going to give him a big audio hug. Love you, man. You know you mean so much to me. So I feel terrible what you're going through. Getting kind of teary-eyed now. Sorry, everyone. So I just want to say I just I couldn't do a whole Sneaky Dragon by myself in the normal way. So I kind of did something a little different. Hope you guys like it. So let's start off with that familiar theme that we all love so much. Hi everyone, welcome to Sneaky Dragon. My name is David Dedrick. Let me just apologize before we get the show going. I just want to apologize for the sound this week. I'm not using our setup at Hello Kitty Studios this week, so I'm just sitting in my shop, sitting in the studio, using a headset mic like you would use for gaming, except it's really cheap because I bought it at a excess cargo place. So you know that means quality. When we did the question show a couple weeks ago, someone asked what other sidecasts we'd want to do, and one of the sidecasts that I said was that it would be kind of fun to do one called Mixtapes. And Ian said, I think it would be fun to do one where we do stories and then we make up a soundtrack for people's stories, and that would also be great to do. And if I could figure out a way for us to get like a toll-free number where people could call and tell us their stories, and then we could add music to your story, that would be great, and that's something I'll have to look into. But right now, that's not possible. But you know what? I have been making mixtapes for people out there. And even though some of you have not got those mixtapes yet, I have finished those mixtapes. I'm just such a messy person. I'm sorry, everyone. Maybe on the show I come across as like Mr. Altogether, like Mr. Got It Together. It's not true at all. I'm terribly disorganized, and I haven't developed, like my daughter Mary, formerly known as Millis. My daughter Mary is such an organized person. It blows my mind. She'll say to you, "I am totally disorganized." And I don't even know what she's talking about because she can do more stuff. She's like her mom. They can do more things in a short amount of time than I can do in 2 months because they're organized and I'm not. And I'll do things like, oh, I'll remember that. I won't write it down. I'll remember to do that. But here's the thing. I don't remember. I do not remember at all. I will forget about it. I like the last 50 post thing that I was supposed to have done. I mean, I started writing that thing way back at before episode 200. I started writing a long process post, and I did a thing about how to do color holds and no, not color holds. How to do yeah, no color holds and how to do coloring in channels. And I did a little tutorial on that and showed how I work and how I make the kind of like computer looking like Pixar almost kind of looking stuff. How I do that. And I forgot about it. I literally forgot that I had it sitting in my drafts on the website, waiting to be posted, and until I was looking there the other day and I realized, oh, I still haven't posted this. That's how organized I am. That's my example. So everyone, mixtapes. So what I thought it would be fun to do is to talk about making mixtapes. 'Cause that's an interesting topic, right? Right? That's gonna fill an hour, right? Ian, so what we're gonna do is I'm gonna talk about a particular mixtape. I just chose one at random from what I've done so far, and I'm not gonna say who I did this for because I don't think they've got it yet. So I'm just gonna talk about it. If you're listening to the show and you're thinking, "Oh, that's a terrible mixtape," I hope that that it's not for you because you're getting it. So I just here's my theory. When I'm doing a mixtape, I've done mixtapes for a long time. I started doing them way back in the 80s, in the good old days of cassette tapes. And I actually don't I don't like I didn't like when I was a kid. I didn't like cassette tape for albums. I think I bought Synchronicity, the Police album, on cassette, and that was simply because it had an extra track on it. That was the reason why. It was a kind of a come on, the same way when they put CDs out at first. They would have like a couple extra tracks on the CD in order to make you, as the non interested person in CDs buy the CD, because now you're interested because it has, you know, three bonus tracks on it. And so that's what they did with cassettes. And so I bought Synchronicity on cassette. And not only was I disappointed in the album, I was also disappointed in the format, because, you know, cassettes kind of suck, because one is either you listen to it all the way through, and of course, side A has, you know, like the first side of the record is on the first side of the cassette, and the second side of the record is on the second side of the cassette. And so you have to listen to all of the music on the first side, or you're like a cassette slob and you take it out partway through the album, and then you either leave it out or you put it in the case. But if you leave it out, then you end up with that kind of sound where it mutes because the tape gets wrecked a little bit. So you left it out, and then you listen to it back, and then the song's playing, da 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 da, and it kind of quiets down, and then it gets loud again. And because you didn't wreck it, but you spoiled it or whatever, you marred it, you've scratched it, like you scratched a record, you've done something to your tape. And then, you know, but if you only like the first side of the cassette, let's say, you had to like listen to the first side, and then you have to rewind all the way back to the beginning. I was kind of lucky. I had actually had a player when I was a kid that it would stop at gaps. So if it was playing and I pressed fast forward, it would fast forward through the entire song, assuming there was no gap in the song, until I got to the space between songs, and it would stop. So obviously it wouldn't work on Sgt. Pepper if I'd happened to have that on cassette, but it would work, you know, on a regular cassette. It would stop anyway. So anyway, that was great technology at the time. It was like I was, you know, I know it's the equivalent of a tin can and a string nowadays, but at the time it was pretty great. As far as listening to cassettes. So I didn't buy cassettes, like pre-recorded cassettes. But what I loved to do was to get a cassette, like go to the store and buy a Maxell or TDK or, you know, whoever, choose your poison, pick your poison cassette. And then I would, you know, I would make my own mixtapes with music that I loved. And so it's kind of fun to look back at those because they reflect your taste of the time. So, you know, the ones I listen to from the 80s, there's a lot of 80s music. You know, I've got the Cramps and the Smiths and Echo and the Bunnymen and other stuff like that. You know, Jonathan Richman, just things that I listened to at that time. I mean, I still listen to those bands, but at that time, I listened to them so much that it made sense for me to put them onto a cassette that I could bring with me and listen to in my car or whatever while I was driving. And I would have those cassettes to listen to. And so I've got to say that the earliest cassettes that I did weren't that great. Often I would put a lot of the same music on them, maybe because I didn't have a lot of records as well, but I put a lot of the same music on them, and it got a little monotonous because you're just hearing, you know, the same bands, and, you know, it just kind of ran all together. So when I got a little older and got more records and got more music, I started to develop my own kind of theory of working on mixtapes. And so when I'm doing a mixtape, let's say I'm making a mixtape for you, like in this case here, I always want a mixtape to start with kind of a bang. So I want it to be it doesn't have to be like the greatest song in the world, but it has to be a song that kind of starts with a bit of a flourish, that has a bit of a pop to it. Because you don't want to start with like a sad song. That's not your best song first, unless that is the very best song you've ever heard, then maybe that's fine. But you don't want to start, and usually you don't want to start with a slow song. So for this mixtape, it's actually not on a cassette. I'm just pretending it was on a cassette, obviously. But for this mixtape, I started with a song called Fanfare by this great musician named Eric Matthews. And it came from an album, I think from 1995, called It's Heavy In Here. And thinking back, someone else asked a question and said, have you ever been a member of a record club, like a kind of record of the month club with an independent record label, which I never... Oh, no, that's not the question. Someone asked if... Sorry, this is that's a totally different question. Someone asked if I'd ever seen a movie, if we'd ever gone to a movie based on the poster. And I don't think I ever have, but I have bought a record based on the cover, and this is one of them. Because on the cover of this album, and not only does it have a kind of cool font that for the It's Heavy In Here thingamajigger, but it also had... a great picture of Eric Matthews kind of dressed in a suit, which was unusual at the time. This is 95, right? 95 we're talking. And he's in a suit on the record with short hair, looking very suave, very 60s kind of suave. And it was on Sub Pop, right? So the home of Nirvana, the home of grunge, the home of plaid, you know, Mac jackets and long hair and ripped jeans. And here's a guy that's put out this record. He's wearing like a suit jacket and a turtleneck and looking like great. Like looks... looking like a million bucks. And so the whole package looked really interesting. And then, you know, I read about it in Mojo Magazine and described it as orchestral pop. And, you know, so it really kind of caught my attention. And so the song starts off with a bang, and I'm just going to play a little bit of the beginning for you, just so you can kind of hear how it starts off, the real boom. So here we go. I'll be right back.
Change my mind from listening to you. I put some stretch, draw fire inside you. Holes on fire that burn my childhood smile. It might be late, but time is guided by open minds that fight disguises.
Oh man, now like, now tell me that is not hot, because that is so good. Like, Eric Matthews, he's one of those jerks who can play a lot of instruments, people I personally hate, just because I'm jealous, because I can't do that. Although, as a kid, I could strum a guitar and also play trumpet, which Eric Matthews actually was a conservatory-trained trumpeter, but he also played piano and organ and recorder and guitar, and so was able to, you know, add a lot of instrumentation to the album. Also, he could arrange things, so many of the songs have strings and stuff like that. And what I love about that is the sound of the, well, one I like is the drums in that song. Like when you hear that cymbal, and it's got that wonderful kind of splash, and then it cuts, and so you get that kind of almost like pause. It doesn't actually pause, but it just gives us kind of a tss, and then the song keeps playing. I just love that. And it does it a few times. And then, of course, like I say, Eric Matthews played trumpet, so he's playing the trumpet on that song. And also playing guitar, I imagine. And also, if you guys remember the band Jellyfish, their drummer, Jason Faulkner, another jerk who plays a lot of instruments, also played, played a lot on this album. He played electric guitar on this song, and he played bass on this song. And if you listen to the bass, some really nice McCartney-esque, like, or, you know, kind of high octave, you know, playing like up, you know, going up high and then high in on the bass. So it's getting, that's a nice, really, what do you call it, melodic bass playing, Ella McCartney. And I like that a lot, obviously, because I'm a big Beatles fan. So I like that kind of touch when that comes into a song. And Matthews himself, you know, I guess his voice is a bit, maybe a matter of taste. I don't know. He kind of reminds me of Nick Drake, that he has that kind of really breathy, voice that's, you know, very kind of intimate. And I think that works on a lot of his songs. You know, I don't think he'd be a great heavy metal singer, for instance. I don't think he, you know, I would be interested in his version of, you know, Iron Maiden's Killers, but I don't think he necessarily would be like the greatest, you know, like, you know, I'm not recommending he join, you know, I don't know, someone, Metallica, you know, or one of those bands. I can't think of any bands. Sepultura? How about that? Is there a band with a pen? Anyway, doesn't matter. Anthrax. There you go. I feel like I've done my work. So that song, obviously, yeah, off with a bang, right? Maybe we'll just hear a little bit of the end of it, just to get a sense of the end of the song before we go into the next one, just to hear it.
I've opened time, unwrapped the surprises. I'm tired and not together. With yearnings that mustn't be filled. If it's not too late, I'd love to know. Is what you're feeling. So super low, I know, and I know it's my childhood smile.
Dang, that's good stuff. I really like his singing style, and the electric guitars in there are just great. That Jason Faulkner, another He's really great too. So I think together they, you know, helping out his friend, they really did some good stuff here. Unfortunately, Eric Matthews' career never really took off. I think this album, It's Heavy in Here, was pretty popular at the time. But then his next album called The Lateness of the Hour, I think it was called, which also is a really good album, also really good. It just wasn't as popular as this one, and then it kind of went nowhere. And so he left Sub Pop. And he then went to, I have a later record of his, but I don't think it's quite as good as these first two, I gotta say. Lateness of the Hour and It's Heavy in Here. Those are really great. So we got off to a good start here. We got a nice kind of, you know, poppy song. And now we want to go to another pop, you know, another kind of song with a little bit of energy to it. Because we don't want to just kind of let the energy die one song in. So you kind of want to keep that going. So you want another song with a little bit of energy to it. And I got to say, with this person's mix, actually took me a long time to get it to where I wanted it to. And I probably overthought this a lot, because I do that anyway. But originally, I had like a lot of kind of more modern songs on it. It's just, you know, because the way I did this was I just went on my iTunes where I have a lot of music. I've got like, you know, 5,000 songs in there. And so that's a lot of songs. It's not all the songs I have, but it's a lot. And so, you know, I just go in there and I would just kind of shuffle through and choose songs that I liked that I thought fit one after another. And then I would kind of refine that once I got to that point. And so with this one, I had a lot of modern songs, and I realized, this person would probably appreciate more like kind of 60s songs, and they would like to want like a bunch of modern songs. So I wanted to kind of bring that more into it. And so I kind of took some more modern songs off, and I kind of replaced them with some older songs just to kind of make it work. It's still a mix of old and new, because I just don't like all songs that are the same. I find it boring myself. So I don't want to bore you. And so I keep it mixed up. So anyway. The next song, it starts like this. I'm going to play a little bit of it. It's got one of my favorite things, which is guitars playing together, but not in unison, but kind of doing their own thing together. And I think that's very difficult to do, but these guys really pull it off really well. They're super great. So give a listen to this song and tell me what you think of it in your head.
I've been lost in the light, I've been living confused, and my mind's been misused. A thousand faces go on as I wander alone, and my dreams are unknown. And though it hurts to know it, I know my face won't show it on sundown. Oh, every sundown.
So yeah, so obviously this album or this song dates isn't from the 90s, isn't from the mid 90s like Eric Matthews, but dates back to the 60s, back to 1969. In fact, this band is the Bubble Puppy, and they were from Austin, Texas, or from the Texas area. I think actually San Antonio, but they're from Texas anyway, and kind of exemplify, or they have kind of their own sound that I still kind of think of as a Texas sound, mostly because of a more modern band, White Denim, who also kind of use that dual guitar interplay and have a bit of, to me, a Bubble Puppy sound. And so I associate that sound because of two bands as being the Texas sound. And I don't know how accurate that is. I've never heard, like, Billy Gibbons from T-Rex, from ZZ Top. I've never heard his band, The Moving Sidewalks, and so I don't know if that band had like dual guitar thing going on. I don't really know. They're different sounding than, say, the 13th Floor Elevators, another Texas band with a very, very tragic story. They're more weird, and I don't think that they had much of a musical plan at all in what they were doing, compared to, say, the Bubble Puppy, which formed specifically as a dual guitar band, and that was the idea of it when they formed. The name itself, which is a weird name, the Bubble Puppy, was chosen, it's based on the name of the children's game from Aldous Huxley's Brave New World. There was a game in there called Centrifugal Bumble Puppy, and so they took their name from that and called themselves the Bubble Puppy. you know, because people did that at the time, you know, it was hip. You had your Aldous Huxley book, and you know how it have like little burns in it from your, like, you know, where you drop your joint and stuff, you know, because the doors of perception, you know, it'd be have little hole burned holes in it, you know, because you're so cool. But anyway, so I just love that. This song actually has less guitar interplay than their big hit song Hot Smoke and Sassafras. Unfortunately, one of the other rules I made for myself when I started this project was that I would not, if I could help it, I would not repeat a song on a tape mix. So every song, every one wouldn't, you know, it would be exact, you know, just its own self. It would have nothing to do with the other one. So so far, I think I've been pretty good about not repeating songs on any of the mixtapes. So I'm just going to play a little bit of this kind of mid part of the song, kind of break, guitar break, where you can kind of hear more of a little bit of the guitar interplay, and then we'll go on to another song. Okay, so that, you know, that's pretty nice. Like, that's really great guitar playing, and something that you don't really hear that much, I don't think, anymore. That kind of play, commercially anyway, I don't think you really hear that kind of stuff. You can hear it if you listen to, like I say, a band like White Denim. Although White Denim, they really pep it up now. Like, I mean, there's this, like, it's kind of, you know, it's played like at 100 miles per hour, whereas, as I think the Bubble Puppy were playing a little slower and, you know, a little more with more groove to it than what you hear with White Denim. So before we go on to the next song, let's just play a little bit of Hot Smoke and Sassafras, the Bubble Puppies big hit, and then you can really hear what I mean when I talk about guitar interplay. I'm just gonna play kind of a middle section of the song, and you can hear some really hot guitar work, which, you know, is really interesting when you think of the song as 69. You think back 3 years from that, it's 66, and you can, you know, in when you think about the guitar playing, like this, well, even if you go back 2 years before that, you think about, like, say, George Harrison's guitar playing, it's very Chet Atkins, rockabilly style guitar playing. What a massive leap ahead. And I think George Harrison was a really good guitar player, but I just think that the technical proficiency, such a massive leap ahead. I'm not a huge fan of guitar playing that's played to, there's people playing scales. Like, I had a friend who had a book called The Heavy Guitar Bible, and what it was just a series of scales that you would just sit and learn. You'd learn by rote all these scales. So then when time came, you could pick up your guitar and you could just go, like, you know, and do all kind of that kind of noodling, soloing, which, you know, if you like that stuff, that's great. But, you know, it's really just like showing off a guitar. There's no heart to it, because you're just playing scales that you've memorized, and then you just kind of lock them into place, and you can go, you know, and then you can move down the neck a little bit, and you can do like a, you know, and you've just memorized scales, so who cares? Whereas these guys are playing, like, you know, they're technically proficient, but they're also, you know, playing with emotion. They're bringing an emotion to this song that, you know, when you listen to the lyrics of this song, they basically, the entire song exists just as a vehicle for these guys to play guitar. Like, the lyrics are nonsense. So, you know, they're just there to, like, facilitate two guys playing some really hot guitar. So let's listen to that and enjoy it.
But in the gardens of the moon, time is held within the silver spoon.
Okay, and then we'll listen to a little bit of White Denim, burning up with their guitars, and then you'll hear what I mean when I identify this two band all Texas trend. Okay, so now what you've done two songs on your mixtape. You got two poppy, two peppy songs. I shouldn't say poppy, but peppy songs that kind of give a little bit of pizzazz, a bit of life to your mix. So your third song, you can go wherever you want. You can go nuts. You can just put any kind of crazy stuff you want, and the person has to listen to it because they're two songs in, and they're kind of like, oh, this is pretty good. And then they get to this song, and they're like, I don't know, what the fuck was Dave thinking of? Why would he put this song in here? And so that's your opportunity to, in the middle of your tape, just to kind of like throw a couple of curveballs at your listener. And, I love the songs, but I'm not sure other people would love them. But, and I'm making these mixtapes and stuff that I love. So, too bad for you if you don't like it. But I know in my mind, though, I'm thinking, well, this is a bit more difficult. You might not like operatic pop. Let's call it that. Someone who kind of influenced Queen a lot. You might not like that as much as I like it, but that's okay. And so I'm going to still kind of choose like a band of weirdos, and then they're going to do this song. Now I think that's some pretty exciting stuff, but that's not everyone's taste, I guess, because this song was a big hit. It was like a number two hit in England in 1974. Like it was, these guys weren't, they weren't like losers. They were big hit. They had some big hits. Because they kind of glommed onto glam. Let's put it that way. They had an original group called Half Nelson. It's two brothers, I should say right away. It's Ron and Russell Mayle. Kind of make up the core of Sparks, the brother. Ron is the keyboard player, and I think he does a lot of arrangements. And then Russell, who I don't think is any slouch himself, he does the singing and they both write the songs. And I think they're an amazing group. And one thing I really like about them is just how much. Well, one is like especially their later albums is like how many like overdubs they do, and the vocals are like an amazing amount of work just put into the vocals themselves, and Russell was a great singer, and I don't know if you've ever seen them, they're kind of interesting because Russell was kind of presented himself as kind of a good-looking young guy, you know, long hair and everything else. And then Ron Mayall, he's like this really skinny guy with short hair and a very, you know, like a big staring eyes and a you know, like a Charlie Chaplin mustache or Hitler mustache, which probably went over gangbusters in the early 70s, you got to say. So, you know, so it was a kind of interesting look. But yeah, they started as half Nelson. And Todd Rundgren heard them and really liked them, and he got Albert Grossman, his manager, and the guy who owned Bearsville Records, to sign them to Bearsville, and they released an album called Half Nelson, and it did not do very well. And I'll play a track, and then you tell me why this did not catch on.
Hey Lisa, they're having a big party down at the Alio Pool tonight.
Ooh, let's do it.
That was a little bit of Biology 11 by Half Nelson, and I can't understand why that didn't take off. Actually, they didn't. They had a little bit of a hit from that album. That was reissued after they had a bit of a success with Sparks. A song called Wonder Girl did all right, but even that song is kind of odd. When you hear it, you're like, well, why did this make it in the charts? But anyway, so yeah. But then you know, This Town Ain't Big Enough for the Both of Us. Now that song, that's a great song. I mean, you know. Don't tell me it's not. Okay, so now that's song three. So you've kind of, you know, you can kind of keep on going with. I keep making it sound like these songs are bad. I think these songs are great. What I mean though is I just think they're kind of unexpected choices. And so, you know, you're still allowed like a couple more free passes. So I went with a song from Preston School of Industry, which was I think first and only solo album by Scott Canberg, a.k.a. Spiral Stairs, from Pavement. And Pavement's a band I loved a lot in the 90s, and I still think quite highly of them. I'm a big fan of Stephen Malkmus and the Jicks, and I think I put, like, way too many Stephen Malkmus and the Jicks songs on people's mixtape so far, but that's okay. I just love that band. So I wanted to at least put one Scott Canberg song on from Preston School of Industry. So I put a nice song, a song I like quite a bit, called Monkey Heart and the Horse's Leg. And I'll just play a little bit of that now so you can kind of hear that song.
Thank you.
So that is that song. That's, as I say, Preston School of Industry, which I guess there really is a Preston School of Industry, but the band Scott Canberg from Pavement. And yeah, there's something about that song. It is of its time, I guess. It has a very naughty sort of sound, and it kind of falls in line with, you know, kind of Pavement of the end there, Terror Twilight, an album, you know, their final album. It has a bit of that, and it, you know, that cello kind of playing through it with that kind of, I don't know what you'd call it, just kind of a drone almost in the background of the song, and just a, you know, a arpeggiated guitar, and I don't know. It really hits me in the right place. So, you know, we've gone to the 70s, we've come back to the noughties, and now, I kept wanting to include the 60s in this. Well, when I wanted to do something from the 60s, I didn't want to be obvious. You know, there's a lot of obvious songs you can do, which I love. There's so many songs from the 60s that I love so much, but I feel like any time you turn on the radio, you could almost hear those songs, you know, Monkey Man and you know, Hey Jude, or I Can See for Miles, or You Really Got Me. You know, those songs are commonly played, and so I could put them on here because I do love them. One of the problems with those kind of songs, though, is because, you know, when you're putting together your own tape mix, you want the songs to reflect you, but also kind of be like, you know, interesting in a, and you don't want to have like any kind of like, you don't want to put on a bunch of songs on that have like a presupposition or the person's own kind of baggage with them. Like, you want to kind of present this sort of fresh sort of thing. At least that was what I wanted to do with these. So I didn't want to have a bunch of songs that everybody knew. And so maybe that's kind of prickly. I don't know. Maybe it makes for like prickly mixes that aren't really easy to get into. I have no idea. Like, I you know, because I've listened to these in the car. I still listen to these in the car all the time when I'm driving because I love them so much. I kept them on the recordable CDs that I used as tests to see how they went together, and I just keep on listening to them. I like them so much. So you know, it's kind of. I feel bad if people don't like them, but at the same time, you know, oh well, because I love them. I think they're great. So the next song is it's a 60s band called the Bamboo Shoot, and the song is called "The Fox Has Gone to Ground." And it's really interesting the way the song is put together. And so I'm just going to play it. I'll play the beginning for you, and you can kind of hear it. And then we'll go to a. I'll come back, and then we'll go to another place in the song. But we'll hear the beginning first. So yeah, that's how the song begins. I don't know anything about this band. The Bamboo Shoot. You know, this is from the Rubble series. I don't know if you know this. You know, there's Nuggets, the album, the original album, compiled by Lenny Kaye, I believe, for Elektra Records, which, you know, was like this in 1970. He put together this collection of kind of garage rock singles that he loved from the 60s, which by 1970, like, you know, it's hard for us to imagine now because we live in this kind of world where we, you know, have access to the past and the present, and the, you know, some people love the past so much, and, you know, it's still alive for us in a way that's hard to imagine for people who lived at that time, when even 4 years, it seemed like a lifetime ago with all that music was so in the past, because so much other music had come out that was so great, and it just kind of kept, you know, so, you know, you might have really liked The Shadows of Night's Gloria, but, you know, by the time, you know, you liked that song in 66, by the time 69 or 70 rolled around, well, I mean, there's already Led Zeppelin and the final Beatles album, and the Rolling Stones were in their, like, heyday, and the Who were coming, you know, Tommy and stuff like that, so all this great stuff kept coming, and you know, so things would get forgotten about, and so Lenny Kaye took the time to, like, put together this interesting album, and I think it had The Shadows of Night, and it had a version of Tobacco Road by, I can't remember who by now, it had the Amboy Dukes, I think, Journey to the Center of My Mind, or The Mind, or whatever, Journey to the Center, let's just call it that, and it had, like, even weird stuff, like The Third Rail, and Sagittarius, I think, are on there, like, a lot of interesting stuff, so, you know, it's this kind of collection, so Rhino re-released that as a 4-CD box, so they had the original album, and then they expanded it into 3 more CDs, full of, like, all this great American psych and garage rock from the 60s. And then they did a second series called Nuggets 2, which was like more international, and it has like a lot of 60s, a lot of British and European psych and garage, and then some stuff from like around the world, like Japanese, and it had the Os Mutantes from Brazil around there. So a lot of like different stuff. But the Rubble series is pretty much strictly British, I think. And it's 20 CDs long. That's how long the series is. So there was a 10 CD collection, and then there was another 10 CD collection. So it's just amazingly large. So anyway, the Bamboo Shoot is part of this humongous, when the Beatles took off with psychedelia, like everyone wanted to like, you know, be the next Beatles, and everyone, you know, and all the record labels wanted to have the next Beatles. And so they're like, well, the psychedelia is what everyone's like, and so we're going to find psychedelic bands, and so we're going to put out bands like this, and we're going to have songs like this. They're going to have parts like this in it. The 60s, man. Whoa. So I like the fact that the fox has gone to ground. I don't know why. I find the song very cryptic, and I like that description. But then I like, it's a weird kind of reference to T.S. Eliot, right? With the hollow men, referencing the poem The Wasteland. And it's not like a direct lift from the poem, but it just kind of makes a sort of a reference to it, and it's sort of interesting because it brings you to that, you know, this is how the world ends, not with a bang, but a whimper. You know, the whole kind of feeling of like, you know, like the 60s feeling of this is the end times, you know, this is the age of Aquarius, things are coming to a head, you know, things are going to go crazy. They didn't realize that things weren't going to come to a head and weren't really going to go crazy, that we'd still be hanging around 30 years later talking about the music that they made at this time. But, you know, anyway, that's a great song. That's fantastic. So from that song, and the next song just seemed to fit so well. I think because that song ends with kind of a bang, not a whimper, ends with a bang, and then the next song starts with a nice kind of quick beginning, and then I really like the band Destroyer. They're a local band, They're a local British band, and they fronted by this guy named Dan Behar, who is also a member of another great band, a great local band, the New Pornographers. This is his solo band, Destroyer, which he started basically as kind of a one-man band with album. I think that first album he did was, I can't remember what it's called anyway. I have it. It's not that great. But the next one, City of Daughters, is pretty good. And then City of Daughters, which kind of marked kind of a more professional take on stuff. And then he did a good one called Thief, I think it's called. And then he did this album. I'm pretty sure I'm getting the chronology right. He did this album, which is called Street Hawk. And I'm not too sure why it's called Street Hawk, because, you know, I just don't know. There's an express delivery company, and I think they're local, and I don't know if they're like in other places called Street Hawk. And so I wonder if it's a reference to that, like a kind of a subtle, hey, these guys, you know, I saw this truck driving on the road and had a cool name, so I'm going to call my record that. And that record is kind of about the record biz, which he kind of likes to write about. He kind of references it also on Thief. That is another record that references the record business a lot. Thief being a reference to the music industry. The Temple is another reference to the music industry. But this song is called Beggars Might Ride, and it's kind of interesting. It's like Dan Behar is kind of like if Al Stewart, you know, Year of the Cat, Al Stewart had a bit of rock in him. So this we'll just start off this song, and then you can hear his voice, and then you can just decide I'm crazy or not. But anyway, he's from Vancouver, so, you know, you gotta like a guy from Vancouver who's, you know, doing his own thing.
Beggars might ride you into doing one thing when humiliation gets taught and humility does not have the ability to move a muscle. Don't do the hustle. Beggars might ride you head of the sea versus the scenery, where every time a man goes overboard it scoring on Beggar's Night.
Oh, okay. Well, that song actually started off a little less abruptly than I thought it did. I forgot it had like kind of a folky start before the drums kicked in and the song started proper. It recorded locally in Vancouver at I think it's called JCDC Studios. John Collins, Dan Collins, I think. One of them at least is, I think John Collins is the bass player in New Pornographers, but they also have a studio. And what's interesting about Destroyer is that every album, almost every album, kind of sounds a little different than the last one. And sometimes you make like radical shifts in the sound, and other times it's sort of subtle shift. But he's very influenced by, I think this album has a lot of like kind of hunky-dory era Bowie-isms to it, and some of the piano playing and stuff like that. And some of his later albums have kind of a almost sort of 80s, kind of 80s alt or independent guitar band kind of sound. Like, you know, he really appeals to me. And then the albums are really idiosyncratic too. Like, you know, like it's just like Destroyer's like, to me, it's like the first band to ever like, or it's really one person, Dan Behar, but it's like the first group to like get a drinking game based around his music, like almost right away. Like that was like one of the first things when I discovered the band. Oh, I'm sorry, JCDC, I just remembered it's John Collins, David Carswell. I feel like a dummy. Anyway, there's like a drinking game, and it's just like it's crazy, right? Like, you know, you're like 4 years into your career, and like your albums are so idiosyncratic that people are like, oh, I get it. You can have like a drinking game based on your music. I mean, that just seems crazy to me. And so some of the rules of it, I'm just trying to think now, some of the rules of the game are like, if you mention like Destroyer in the song, he likes to put the band's own name in the songs quite often. If it has like the name of a woman in the song, if it references a Vancouver landmark or neighborhood in the song, that's another thing he likes to write about. If it references another song, so sometimes you'll say like, you know, Proud Mary, da 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 da. So that's like two drinks there, right? Mary, and also Proud Mary is a song. And so things like that. So there's like a whole bunch of little things. I don't know if I should... You can look it up. If you look up Destroyer Drinking Game, you can get destroyed drinking to a Destroyer album. That's how it works. So yeah, I think that's a pretty good midway song. And so keeping with Vancouver theme, I then went with another local band called the Mohawk Lodge, and just a great song. And I've never heard a song by them that I think is as good as this. Is this like this kind of bolt from the blue kind of a song called Wear 'Em Out. And it's just one of those songs that is like, this is full of passion and intensity, and you can just hear it in the guy's voice. And it's just like, could they ever put that amount of energy into a song again? And maybe that's why that's the song is what it is. Like, it's just, you know, they just couldn't come up with something better than this. One of those great songs that kind of sounds like it's falling apart as you hear it, and I don't know, I just love that. I love the sound and everything about that song. I don't know why I like it so much, but I do. So that's the Mohawk Log. So, you know, we can hear where we're going here. When I'm doing a mixtape, I also try to think of it as like a record. So, you know, when you do a record, you want to start off strong. And you want your stuff, you know, you still want good stuff, but, you know, it doesn't have to be as strong as a start, but it still has to have, like, something to it. And then as you get towards the end of the record, that's when you can put your, you know, you kind of want to start to, like, kind of jack it back up again, make it, like, start to rise up. There's a British band, I think I mentioned them many times in the show, Field Music. I really like Field Music a lot. And so, you know, right now I'm kind of obsessing about them, and so their music is going to appear a lot on these mixtapes. The same way that in the 80s, you know, it was full of the Cramps and the Smiths and stuff like that. And now, you know, it's going to be full of, like, Field Music and other bands that I'm obsessing about. So the Field Music's album, Tones of Town, is such a great record. It's one of those records where I think every song is perfect. Like, I just think it's like a perfect album all the way, beginning to end, perfect. And so, you know, it's hard for me to, like, pick songs off of that I think are great. But I really like this song. It's called In Context. And one thing I like about this song is it's great to run to. Like, it has this great beat that matches, you know, the speed I like to run at. And so I can put this song on and I can just start running and not even feel the run. Like, I can just... This song just like erases the fact that I'm having to run. So that's very helpful. Like, when you're running, you don't want to think you're running. So it's great that this song does that. And so I'm going to start it from the beginning, and you can hear, like, how it kind of builds up. And that's one other thing I like about in songs is I love songs that start, you know, like a few instruments and then slowly add more and more instrumentation as it goes. And it kind of builds up into this big, you know, huge thing with a lot of intricate parts being played by different instruments. I really enjoy that a lot. So I don't know if this song does that, but it does start off small and gets a little bigger. So we'll listen to that, and then I'll be right back. That's really great. Now, so you can hear, like, this, you can sort of hear the guitars coming in now, and it's that great, it's almost like a backwards guitar riff, which I always appreciate in a song, if someone can do something a little different with the guitar lead or fills. And then we come to the vocals, and then it has that right there, and then it has that, I don't know if it's like goes to an instrument or if it's just some sort of treated vocal, but I really like how it has that high part there. I think that's really fantastic. I love that song. And did it make you feel like running? I'm sure it did. I'm sure you were just like running around the room after you heard that. It's just that great. And then I just love that the song kind of ends in this kind of weird breakdown that kind of, you know, a sort of funky breakdown at the end of the song. But it still keeps the beat, which is really important because, you know, I'm still running, so I still need that beat to be going on there. So that it's just great. And what, you know, what's fun about this band is that it's two brothers, the Bulis brothers, and they you know, they grew up together. One of them was given a drum set for Christmas, and then the other one learned to play that drum kit because, you know, his older brother was playing it, or his, and then they got, one of them got a guitar, and they both learned to play guitar. And, you know, they're, once again, they're a couple of jerks who can play a lot of instruments. They can play guitar, they can play drums, they can play bass, they can play keyboards, you know. So they basically, they do most of the instruments on the albums in the studio. You know, they have a performing band, but, you know, when they're together, they also know how to make one of them knows how to do arrangements, and so they arrange the strings and stuff themselves. You know, it's so frustrating, but it's, you know, it's really great. And so, and, you know, they kind of have their own studio as well, so they kind of work at their own speed, and it's just fantastic. When you see them live, it's fun because they'll switch it up. You know, one of them's playing drums and the other one's on guitar, and then when it's the other one's turn to sing his songs, he gets on the guitar and the other one goes behind the drum kit, and it's kind of fun to watch. And they both have their own style of drumming and their, you know, and their own songwriting style. It's quite great. And I don't know them well enough to know who is singing and which one of them has done which song. You know, I kind of know, but not totally, if you know what I mean. I saw them live, so that helped a bit, but still I'm a little shaky. But yeah, I think that's a fantastic group. So you know, and I love pop songs. I love pop, and one of the kind of, I love, you know, this kind of pop song, and I love the kind of power pop that kind of came around in the late 70s. And when I say I love it, I should say I love the idea of it, because when you listen to it now, a lot of it's so-so. So when you hear a band that gets it really right, like the early Heartbreakers, or, you know, like the DBs and bands like that, and this is the band, and we know this band because we know this person, because he's been a guest of our show many times, David M and his band No Fun, from their album Snivel, which came out, I think, in 1984. It came out, so I was just finishing high school when this album came out, and it was all over the college, like the local college stations. You know, it got tons of airplay. The song Me and Warren Beatty was, you know, being played all the time. And so I didn't choose that song. I chose a different, you know, just because, you know, you just choose. Yeah, you know, I wanted something that felt right, and so this song felt right after Field Music in context. So I'll play a little bit of No Fun with David M, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about it.
Let's look for tadpoles and swamp mosquitoes and find the stuff they ground up into Fritos. Let's go to town, we make a pretty pair. I think we'd have a lot of fun up there.
Got a little bit of that kind of power pop sound, you know, not really too connected to what was happening in 84, I guess. It's hard for me to remember now what was happening. I don't remember in 84, but, you know, that organ, you know, kind of a Hammond organ sound, to, you know, references the 60s. I mean, it has a bit of a smartassy element to it with the lyrics, you know, ambivalence gets me, and that's nice, but that's kind of fun. For whatever reason, this song I always stuck in my head. I remember when I worked on the fishing boat for a summer when just after Lisa and I got married. I actually would, when I was sitting on the deck just waiting, you know, we were really busy sometimes, and other times we were just kind of sitting around waiting for the fish to start biting. And I just remember sitting on a bucket on the boat, you know, just kind of looking out in the sea, and I would sing the song. And for whatever reason, I knew the whole song. I listened to Snivel like a lot at that time, and so. But this was one of the songs that stuck in my mind, and I could sit and sing the whole song. And so maybe that's why I like it so much, is that it sticks to that. But I'm just gonna play a little bit. I'm just gonna play the. I guess it's the bridge. I don't think it's the chorus, which I think would be Ambivalence Gets Me would be the chorus. So this would be like the bridge. The third part of a song, I guess. I just think it's really great. So I'm going to play it just so you can hear it. So here we go. A nice flourish from Paul Leahy at the end there, the great guitar player Paul Leahy, who doesn't really get much of a look in that song, so it's nice that he gets the chance just to kind of shine at the very end there. I really like that bridge. I guess is it a bridge that repeats twice in the song? I don't really understand songwriting very well, so I always assume a song is made up of verse, chorus, and then the bridge, and sometimes it'll repeat, the verse structure will repeat a few times, a chorus will happen a couple times. That's the part we like to sing and punch our fists to, and then the bridge, it kind of acts as a sort of a palate cleanser, so that you're ready for the next chorus. So yeah, that's it's in, the thing with No Fun was they performed in Vancouver for many years. They formed in the mid 70s, kind of got adopted, a sort of semi. He kind of adopted by the punk scene in Vancouver, although the punk scene was very, very much Vancouver-centered and had a hard time accepting people from outside. I guess Victoria's Dish Rags did pretty well in the scene, but mostly, No Fun were from Surrey, this kind of formerly rural or still kind of semi-rural at that time municipality, kind of looked on as a bunch of hicks. So, the idea of these guys having any kind of cachet in a punk scene was laughable, I guess, to the cognoscente. And so they never really had like a big part to do with the scene. And so that kind of probably colored the way that, way they performed, they worked and stuff like that. But David early on bought a four-track, I think an Ampex four-track recorder. And so, just like Sgt. Pepper was recorded on, right? And so, basically, in his parents' basement, he set up this four-track with his drum kit, and Paul's guitar amplifier was put in the root cellar near the adjacent to the basement, and that's where they recorded the guitar sound. And then they would set up the vocal, the mics, the drums had the same mics as the vocals, so the drums would be recorded first, et cetera, et cetera. And they recorded a lot of songs in David's mom and dad's basement, and did a lot of albums. I mean, even just like the post, like, there's kind of different phases of the band, just because, when you don't have a lot, when you're just kind of doing something without a lot of recognition, it gets hard to get the energy to keep doing that. And so I think members fell away over time, and it was just David's kind of own stubborn, pig-headed, not recognizing reality, I guess. I don't want to say he's delusional, obviously, but what I mean? Just like someone who, just so wants to play music and have fun with music. So, they made all these great albums. He and Paul, Ghost Paperboy and Robin's Gay Trailer Park, their first one together is fantastic, and Snivel, I think, is great. And then they did 1894 and the New Switcheroo, and every album's great. I think every album's great, but Snivel is my all-time favorite. It's just one of my all-time favorite records of all time, actually. I can't tell David that, because that would just, I don't want to pump his ego, but I just think it's a great album. It's a fantastic album. And it's interesting, because I was talking with, or emailing with one of our, or was I message boarding with one of our listeners, Sarah Walsh, aka Kitty Lugnut. I was talking with Sarah, and she kind of referenced No Fun as being, oh no, it was in the questions, wasn't it? Question show. Gee, that sure keeps coming back up. In the questions show, she referenced No Fun as a comedy band, and I know that they do funny songs. I know that's true, but it's weird. I've never thought of them as a comedy act, and maybe that's just because I'm delusional myself. Or maybe it's just because I don't think, I don't know. I don't feel like if you are doing, if your songs have a humorous element to them, I don't necessarily think of that as like making you a comedy band. I know that sounds weird, but I think that, you know, you can be funny in music and not be like a novelty act. And that's kind of what I think of as a comedy band. It's kind of a novelty act. And I think it's a big difference between doing a song like Ambivalence Gets Me or Me and Warren Beatty. There's a big difference between that and doing like, you know, being Leapy Lee and doing Little Arrows. Like, to me, there's a big difference there. And so I don't like, it's not that I don't like to, but I just don't, I've never really thought of them as a comedy act. You know, it's kind of like Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention. Like, they did lots of funny songs, like kind of lots of satirical songs, as I'll say. But would you think of them as a comedy act? Would that how you describe them? I just don't think of them that way. I don't know why. You know, maybe they are. Maybe, I don't know. I just think, you know, Frank Zappa, he asked the question, and I think it's very pertinent. Does humor belong in music? And when he asked that question, I think he was, you know, feeling like that they had been pigeonholed as a novelty act, but I've never thought of them that way. I think, you know, that, you know, yes, their songs had humor in them, but also they were like real songs, like real, you know, that had told stories and, you know, and okay, they had a wry sense of humor or a wry outlook on life, but that doesn't necessarily make it like comedy. It might, you know, I could be wrong. I might be it. I'm just fooling myself, obviously. I'm not going to talk about it anymore. I'm going to move on. Once I was driving up to a lake near where, it's not super near, but you know, it's about an hour and a half outside of Vancouver, called Evans Lake. And they have a camp there for elementary school students to go spend a week. Your parents pay for you to go, and there's parent supervisors. And so you get to go there for a week and kind of, you know, go hiking and do all that kind of stuff. I went when I was in grade 6, and my daughters got to go when they were in grade 6. And when Mary was there, and when he was there too, actually, I volunteered as a parent supervisor. And so because I was working, my brother-in-law and I, we split our, was it my brother-in-law and I? I can't remember now. Did I go for a full week? I can't remember. One of them I split, one of them I didn't. Anyway, so maybe I was there for a full week. Gee, that sounds like a long time. Anyhow, I was driving up, and I was listening to this Uncut CD, Uncut, the British music magazine, the fantastic British music magazine. Just a little tiny step down from Mojo, but still really good. I was listening to this CD that was curated by REM's guitar player, Peter Buck. And it's okay. It's pretty good. It's a little more it's kind of modern, like a lot of modern stuff that he chose on it. And so I was listening to it, and then this song came on, and this is what I heard. I just thought that was fantastic. Like, I could not believe how great that was. And I just couldn't understand why I hadn't heard of this artist before. And this is someone I love a lot and actually hasn't appeared a lot in the mixtapes, which is kind of amazing because I have been obsessed by this artist for a long time, and it's Sufjan Stevens. And I just, you know, it's funny. There was a song from his earlier album, Michigan, was on a different Uncut collection. And I didn't think much of it, I guess. I heard it, and it didn't make a mark. It didn't shoot what I like to call the blue beam of light into my brain. And so I heard it, and I didn't think much of it, and so I didn't pursue it. But I heard this song, driving the Sea to Sky Highway from Vancouver to Squamish, which is on the way to Evans Lake, and this song blew my mind. Absolutely blew my mind. I listened to it like over and over again on the way there and on the way back home again. And like 2 days late after I got back, or maybe even a day after I got back, I went into town and I bought two CDs. I bought this CD, Illinois, and I bought Seven Swans. And both albums are fan-fucking-tastic. And I just couldn't believe how great this was. And what I love about it is that he does something really interesting where he, like, if you listen to it again, like, if you go back and listen to it, it seems like everything's backwards. Like, he's taken, like, a pretty common riff, whether it's what the violins are doing at the very beginning or what the guitar is doing, but he's done it backwards. And so it makes it different, you know. And then he's added the banjo, which I'm a sucker for the banjo. What can I say? I love dueling banjos from Deliverance. And so, it all worked for me. And then I'll play a bit of the vocals for you because you'll hear, you know, another callback to an artist I love a lot, Nick Drake, with the breathy vocals. So let's hear Sufjan sing a little bit.
She gave us a medal, she gave us a medal. If seeing is right, then look where you're at.
Yeah, really, really beautiful singing voice and just... it's also interesting, like, Sufjan's another one of those guys, you know. And I forgot to mention David M is one of those guys, one of those jerks who can play a lot of instruments. He can play keyboards, he can play drums, he can play guitar, he can play bass guitar. Ugh. But anyway, Sufjan is another one of these impossible people who can play, you know, he plays the banjo, he plays the guitar, he plays the piano, he plays the recorder and the clarinet and you know, the xylophone and you name it. He plays it. And what's interesting when you read the credits for this album is that, you know, it was made all around, you know, he records on a computer and he's using Pro Tools or whatever. And so he's, you know, it says, you know, the quiet parts recorded in Sufjan's apartment and the piano's recorded at a nearby Episcopal church. And like the drum tracks, I guess, were sent to the drummer who lives in Washington State. And he set up, you know, he had his own drum setup and he recorded the drum tracks and then sent them back to Sufjan for him to incorporate back into the songs. You know, just stuff like that, you know, it's a very modern way to make an album, I guess, you know, and just on the run almost. And yeah, it's just a fantastic record, you know, so that's got to go in there. And it really fit really well. And what's weird though, normally when I'm getting near the end of, and this is the second to last track on the first side, quote unquote, first side of the CD. And man, I'm already really long. The first side of the CD is that it's longer than the end. Like normally when I get to the end, I want a longer song because I want to kind of have a big epic finish to the first side, you know, and then you're going to come in fast on the second side, right? So you want to have like a kind of a big song to finish it. And this song is longer than the end song. But I think the end song is the more kind of epic song. And so I went with, you know, a band that I like a lot. I think we've established that because we use their song for the show. Keep that under your hats, everyone. But yeah, Belle and Sebastian. And so I really like this song, The Stars of Track and Field. And so I'm going to play a little bit of this. I'm going to kind of play for more of the middle of the song where it's kind of getting kind of epic. But it also follows that thing I love of kind of slow build to the end. So here, let's take a listen.
Stars of track and field you are, stars of track and field.
So you could hear what I mean, like a sort of epic ending there. Like that's what I really wanted for the end of this side, was just to have like a song that kind of just gives it, just puts it all out there. You know, the stars of track and field are beautiful people, everyone. Like, I don't know if you knew that. A lot of us never really liked the jocks in our day, but they are beautiful people. Let's face it, they know it too, and they'll tell you. So that ends that side. That ends it with the kind of a, you know, with a bit of a bit of pop. And you know what, it also brought back that song also brought back the trumpet, so it kind of echoes the first song on that side. That's kind of fun. I didn't even, you know, I'm sure I subconsciously planned that. So then I needed, you know, you need a song that's going to kind of bring your second side, like just kind of bring it in and just kind of say let's go, and it's going to happen just like this.
J'ai très très peur, ça c'est certain. J'ai très très peur, mais beaucoup moins que tous les gens à cette taille. Mon bateau en très profond naviguer une direction.
Now I really like Stereolab, and I understand why they're not more popular than they are. I mean, I'm not going to kid myself, but I personally really like them. I think they're fantastic. Their first couple albums are so, like they're a little kind of more, seem very Velvet Underground, very beholden to the sound of Velvet Underground, if that makes sense. Actually, you know what's funny? So does the first Belle and Sebastian album has a lot of Velvet, to me, it has a lot of, or at least one song that has a very, very strong Velvet Underground feel. A little boring for that reason, but yeah, the first couple of Stereolab albums they're so, but when you get to like Mars Audiac Quintet, their 1994 album, I think that they really started to kind of change their sound, and they really kind of nail like a new great sound. And then this song comes from an album called Emperor Tomato Ketchup, which is a great album. Great album. Dots and Loops, which followed it, is so. They went through a little bit of electronica phase, like, you know, like they were produced by German electronic kind of guy, you know, and it's so. It's not, it's a little too, I don't know, it doesn't swing enough, and like I think that's part of the appeal of this group, is that they kind of use the German kind of krautrock kind of motoric sound, you know, that very kind of repetitive thing, but it also kind of swings at the same time. So they, you know, they have quite a few influences that are they're interesting, like krautrock, but also Stephen Reich, the minimalist composer. I can hear a lot of him in their music. And then 60s kind of beat groups, you know, French ya-ya music and stuff like that kind of shows up. Their best album, Cobra and Phases Group, play Voltage in the Milky Night. Yes, I always remember that title because I love it so much. But what's interesting is Cobra and Phases Group were actually two Brussels art movements. So a Cobra actually spelled out like let's say Copenhagen, Brussels, Amsterdam, or something like that. Like it actually had like it was an anagram of an area that. This is a reference to like kind of these art groups in this album that is. That it's quite interesting. It's quite good. Unfortunately, in 2002, one of the band members, Mary Hansen, was killed by a truck while she was riding her bicycle. And I think that, you know, when you lose a member, even if they're not like a key songwriter in the band, it changes the chemistry in the band, and eventually the band kind of ground to a halt. And it's too bad because they really had something special in that 1994 to 2001. Just great stuff. All those records are really great. And so I just felt like that was a great start. That really pumps it up. And so I needed to go somewhere else. And I wanted to go back in time. I wanted to go back to the 60s because I was feeling guilty that I wasn't putting enough 60s songs on this thing. And so the next song I chose was kind of an obscure song. I don't know why it's obscure. I'm going to play it for you. And you tell me why you think more people don't know this song. It's called Watch Your Ride. It's by Jefferson Airplane. So, you know, big band, Jefferson Airplane, from their album Bathing at Baxter's, the album that followed their gigantic breakout hit, Surrealistic Pillow. And this song is just like, it's like a pop, instant, you know, kind of psych pop classic, I think. I don't know why it didn't catch on. Promising, right? Starts off promising. And then like, here's the chorus. We'll play the chorus.
Times don't change. Times don't ever change for me. And I know that you could be the only thing in my world. The only thing that my mind could find for love. For love and peace of mind.
Something that Jefferson Airplane did that no other, not too many other bands did at the time. I can't think of too many bands that did this at the time, which is to have essentially three lead singers in the band. And the lead singers, Marty Balin, the guy who founded the Jefferson Airplane, Grace Slick, and Paul Kantner, who wrote this song, you know, they would all kind of sing together, and it really makes an interesting sound. So when you get to the chorus, you got all three voices kind of all playing off each other, and it's pretty fantastic. Really works on a song like Saturday Afternoon. Is that what it's called? Won't You Try? Won't You Try / Saturday Afternoon? Something like that. Anyway, that's also on Bathing at Baxter's, and after Bathing at Baxter's. And it's a great song because of that vocal interplay. It's fantastic. And you know, this time all the band members were all like fully committed to the group, and so it, you know, you get this really great band and you get this great band sound. And I don't really understand, like, is this song too much like Somebody to Love? Is that why it was a failure? I can't understand. I don't even know if it was a single, like, and maybe the band refused to let RCA release this as a single, you know, playing the self-destructive, hippie, anti-commercial garbage. And maybe that's what happened. I don't know, because I know that they did release You, Me, and Puneel, which is a great song, but it's like over five minutes long, and it's probably was a little too long for radio play at that time, and also has a weird title. So, you know, you wouldn't want to go in a record store and request that off the 45 rack behind the counter. Okay, so that's a fantastic song, though. And so I made my peace with the 60s, and so I wanted to come up to another band. I've just really been obsessing about this Canadian band that came out, you know, at the same time as like Sloan and Thrush Hermit and all the kind of Halifax and Jade and all the Halifax bands that I love so much, Eric's Trip and Elevator Through. And I think, you know, and so I've just been really obsessing with them. So I've been sticking them on mixtapes just so I, you know, because I like them so much. And so I'm going to play a little bit of this song, Karate Man by the Super Friends. This just a fun band. And I really like the guitar sound of this band. I think it's really, really kind of innovative almost. Maybe I'm overselling it, but I think it's really interesting sounding. So we'll just play a little bit of it, and you can see why I felt like this is like, so you get three songs in a row that are like super, you know, like supercharged, you know, because the first side only had two, and this side, you know, so I want to like kind of double down for the second side. So I get three songs that kind of all kind of come at you.
Karate Man,
was overselling the guitar playing in that. There are songs where the guitar playing is a little bit more interesting, but you know, this song's more of a kind of like a sort of power pop, power punk kind of thing. And if you grew up in the 90s, like, or not grew up, but if you, I guess I grew up in the 90s. I grew older in the 90s. And if you were there and you remember, like, the Halifax sound of that time period, like, because I'm Canadian. And so, like, when I grew up, there was a TV station in Canada called Much Music. And in those days, they actually played music, kind of like MTV. Remember when MTV played videos? Well, so did Much Music one time play videos. And they also did, like, these kind of regional shows. So there was a West Coast one, which I didn't like very much. It was hosted by a real, like, kind of commercial guy who was right in the pocket of, like, the worst, like, jerks in this area, you know, like Sam Feldman and the horrible manager whose name I can't, Bruce Allen, who managed, like, Loverboy, and I think he manages Michael Bublé now, you know. So just, like, saying those names, you just know, like, what kind of sickening trash those guys represented. Brian Adams as well. And so, you know, like, that was the kind of stuff, and I just feel like he was, like, this, like, right in the pocket of all that garbage, right? So he never had, like, an interesting show. But the other guys, these other two guys who were kind of funny guys that did the show out of the Maritimes, well, they had just had this fantastic scene to dig into. And I mean, the kings of that scene were Sloan, not only because they were really talented, but also because like Chris Murphy was like a great interviewer, a really funny guy. And so, it's, you know, so you just couldn't help but like watch that show and just be like just, ah, the scene looks so great, it looks so fun, and everyone was having like such a good time. And so, yeah, I just love that sound so much of all those bands. Like, they all kind of share a similar DNA in terms of what they sound like, because, you know, it's a small place, the Maritimes, like the Halifax, Nova Scotia. You look on a map, you can see it's not only was it small, like, geographically, but it's small, like, a local scene. And so everyone kind of has shared this and that. I mean, Chris Murphy from Sloan played drums for a while in the Super Friends when Sloan went on hiatus after they had a lot of trouble with their second album with Geffen Records. And so he just kind of, like, you know, burned off some steam smashing drums. Although was a bass player in Sloan, he played the drums in the Super Friends for a while. And so, yeah, I just, you know, so that, you know, that's kind of like a bit of a trip down memory lane for me. But also, I think that's a really good song. And I think it really kind of like, bah, kind of boom, puts it right then there, gives you like that 1-2-3. That's a really popular punch. You know, like everyone's heard the 1-2, but the 1-2-3, that's the real punch. Because you do 1-2 kind of, and then the third one's right in the chin. And so, you know, now it's time to go a little weird. It's like on the first side. I do love this song, obviously. That's why it's here. But, you know, it's just not like, it just kind of slows it down a little bit. Let's just take it down. Take it down a little bit, and we'll listen to some Midlake from their great album, The Trials of Van Occupanther. This is a band from Texas that in no way resembles White Denim or the Bubble Puppy. And so it blows my whole theory out of the water, but that's okay. I can deal with it. So we'll just hear a little bit of this song called Roscoe by Midlake. Now, I think this song is great in all kinds of different ways. One, I love the instrumentation of it. And I also just like the vocals and even the lyrics, which I'm not always like a lyric guy. No, sometimes I pay attention, sometimes I don't. And I never listen to them like all the way through, like enough to like know exactly what the song is about. But I just like how chatty the song is. Like, it's just really full of words, and it just really kind of run. It's like full of run. It's like a run-on sentence song. It just keeps going, and I really like that about it. It really kind of works for me. And it kind of works in that part of the mixtape where you want to kind of, you know, you don't, like, if you're doing something and every song is fast and really going for it, after a while it gets boring because every song is going for it. And so you need to have like a kind of quiet moment to like kind of change the pace of things, just to kind of give you a breather and let things kind of calm down. And then sometimes that's a weirdo song, or sometimes it's just like a song that's a little slower than the other songs. And this song is like super slow. It's not like it's a ballad or anything, but it just kind of has a different kind of feel to it, almost more kind of a rural feel. It kind of goes in a different place. That's a great album, by the way, everyone. Tales of Van Occupanther. It's interesting. And they're an interesting band, Midlake. Their last album is quite good, but what's interesting is that the original songwriter, singer-songwriter, or like lead vocalist, quit the band partway through recording their most recent album. And so the band decided to carry on without him, and they just like scrapped all the recordings they'd done and started all over again and released a new album. It's interesting. It doesn't happen very often, and I don't know how successful they're going to be, but it is pretty brave of them to carry on and release a new album. Anyway, so, you know, I seem to be torturing myself on this mixtape with artists who are super talented multi-instrumentalists. And the next one is someone almost in, maybe a progenitor of David M and No Fun. Maybe less so, because No Fun were a band, but he recorded all his songs in his parents' garage. He bought a house across the street from his parents and set up a full-scale recording studio in his parents' garage and proceeded to make cut records there. And I'm talking about Emmett Rhodes. And Emmett Rhodes started off in the 60s in a band called the Merry-Go-Round. Well, first he was in a band called the Palace Guard. Then he was in a band called the Merry-Go-Round. And they had, like, kind of a West Coast hits. Like, you know, I don't know if you guys remember the days when you could have, like, regional hits. But that actually did happen. And so the songs were very popular up and down the West Coast. Like, here in Vancouver, it was a hit on commercial radio. And there was a song called Live. And so that song was pretty popular for the Merry-Go-Round. And then the band had some problems. You know, the band folded. Emmett Rhodes kind of started his own kind of solo stuff. And so he cut a lot of solo tracks as the Merry-Go-Round for A&M Records. And then he was signed to ABC Dunhill Records to record for them. And the thing is that he signed like the worst recording contract of all time. And one thing is that he guaranteed 2 albums a year at a time when that was like the Beatles did that before, up to Revolver. Like, that was like this old-fashioned model of how you have a career. And so here's this one guy on his own, you know, writing, recording, engineering, producing, playing all the instruments on his records and learning the instruments in order to play them on the record. And he's supposed to do an album two albums a year. Like, this is impossible. So he failed in this, and he ended up getting sued by his own record company. And the whole thing just like ruined his career. Also, he had this kind of, you know, minor hit album out. And then A&M Records decided to cash in on this and put out their own version of an Emmett Rhodes album called American Dream, which had some great songs on it, but it confused the consumers. And so, you know, both albums didn't do very well. And then his career kind of never went on from there. But he did a great album. Well, American Dream is pretty good, but he did a great album, Emmett Rhodes. And then he did another great album called Mirror. And that was actually the first one that I found. I found in a little record store, a little used record store in my neighborhood in North Delta, right on the corner of 96 and Scott Road. I'm sure locals know where that is. I can't remember what it's called now, Strawberry Records, something like that. And so I went in there and I bought this Emmett Rhodes album because I had heard about him through Nuggets. There you go, everyone, Nuggets. And so I bought this album and it just blew me away. It's so great. It's so great. And you can't hear it in the CD, but on the record, you can hear a woman's voice, and I assume it's his mother, and she says, Emmett. She goes, Emmett? And then he starts playing the song, and so I guess he just left it in there. But it somehow got taken off for the CD. I don't know why they would do that. Why not leave in that ambient moment? It's so interesting. But anyway, so he played a mix of, you know, kind of almost McCartney-esque pop, with a little rocky, a little kind of rock and rolly too. But so here's a song that was kind of like a chart hit at the time. I don't think it charted very, very well. It wasn't like a big hit, but, you know, it did okay. But it's called Really Wanted You. And so we'll play that now, and then you'll hear why I like it.
Five stitches in a gym. man who came along. I was hoping you'd come, 'cause I really wanted you. Yes, I really wanted you. I was sleepless till dawn, with my heart breaking down. I've been lonely too long, and I really wanted you. Yes, I really wanted you.
Yes, he's playing all those instruments on his own. So I assume he did a drum track, and then he added the guitar or the bass, and built it up from there. It's an amazingly well done song. I originally had put on a different Emmett Rhodes song called "Level Stone You," but it was a little slower, and I just felt like it kind of stopped the mix here. And you know, I always have trouble with the ends of mix. I always start off really strong. And I have a few songs in my head, and I can kind of make it work, and like, you know, and it all kind of seems to come together well. And then you hit the second side of it. I don't know whether you lose inspiration or you lose energy or whatever, and you just kind of slow down, and then you get to the end, and you're just like, ugh, this sucks. So then you have to go back, and you take off some songs, and you move stuff around. And often, sometimes, the songs are good, they're just in the wrong place in the mix, so then you just have to, like, reverse them. And that, you know, so this case, I liked a lot of songs, I just felt like they weren't in the right place. So sometimes, I did take off one of the Emmett Rhodes songs and put this one on in place. You know, that's early 70s, so I felt like maybe I should go, I just want to say Emmett Rhodes has a new album out after many years of not being in the recording industry, just because, you know, he's, like I say, he's had legal problems all these years, and I don't even know if they're solved yet, but hopefully they are. But he's just put out a new album, which is fantastic, and he did an interview with someone who I'm hoping that we'll get on the show one of these days. So cause I'd love to talk to him about a couple of different artists he's interviewed and discussed. Anyway, so let's do a little power pop, because we haven't had some power pops inside one of this thing, and let's listen to the Real Kids. Funny, I have kind of two versions of this song. I've got one on a Rhino collection that came out in the 90s. They did a kind of a interesting series called DIY, and it was DIY like English punk. They did two CDs of that, and it's got like a lot of punk stuff on there. And then obviously that's why it's called DIY punk. But you know, like, has punk bands from that time period, besides the Sex Pistols and the Clash. Like, they had easy to license punk bands. So, and that's interesting. It's interesting. And I remember when I mentioned that in the early days of CDs, they would like put extra tracks on the CDs to try and as a come on. And that's what's featured on those DIYs. They have like a couple of songs with asterisks that are like not featured on the record or not featured on the cassette. But anyway, so then those are pretty great. And then they did some power pop ones for UK you know, so it's like Nick Lowe and the Crystal Flyers and some interesting bands like that. And then it has some American ones, and it's got these two power pop ones that are really good. And then it has some weird, like, UK ones that are, or sorry, US punk ones that are like city, like, so there's like an LA one, and there's like a New York one and a Boston one. And the problem with that is, like, the New York one's pretty good, but the LA and the Boston, it doesn't feel like there's enough great bands to, like, have two CDs worth of stuff from that, those scenes. And, like, the bands that were good in those scenes, like, really, like, stand head and shoulders. Like, you know, like there's X, and then you have to, like, go a long way down to, like, the Germs and the Dills and all that stuff for the LA one. And same for the Boston one, like Mission of Burma, and then a long way down for the rest of the band. But anyway, so I've got these two power punk ones for the US, and it has this song on it. And I thought it was okay, but not that great. And then I got a Mojo magazine that had this collection on it of songs that were New York punk, it was called, which is kind of a misnomer because the real kids were from Boston. And I know that, you know, that part of the country, everything's kind of squished together, so I guess they're close. But anyway, they're not really a New York punk band, they're a Boston punk band. But the song, the version of the song on this CD was like, it's like great. It's way better than the one on the other. I don't know why. I don't know if it's a different mix or what. It's just, but it's really good. So anyway, I just liked it a lot. So I wanted to put it onto one of these mixtapes. So it went on there, and it's, you know, it's power punk, right? So it sounds like kind of British pop, but with an American R&B kind of sound to it. So we've had 78. I don't know if the song is actually from 78, but it's probably, you know, from the 70s. And let's go all the way back to the 90s, and we'll listen to Little Elliot Smith. Hey, and speaking of Elliot Smith, this is another question we got on the question show, which is, what do we think of Elliot Smith? And I said, I really like him, especially his album XO. I think XO is a great album, and I also like Figure Eight a lot, too. But this is my favorite Elliot Smith song. I just love this song, and I'm going to start playing it, and you'll probably know why I like it so much just from the sound of it, because it sounds a lot like a band that I like a lot.
Baby Britain feels the buzz, floating over a sea of vodka, separated from the rest. Fights problems with bigger problems, sees the ocean fall and rise, counts the waves that somehow didn't hit her. You'd be a work of art. You put yourself apart. Now can't help until you start.
I don't know why I like those soft voice singers so much, but here is another one. Kind of in that Nick Drake. There's no Nick Drake on this mix, but we got a lot of guys who are, that I can reference as being sort of Nick Drake-like, although this is not following in the line of his earlier albums, which are mostly kind of folky acoustic albums. This is like a full band, and to be honest with you, I prefer a full band. I'm not a huge fan of like this guy and guitar music. I think it's okay, but if I have to like listen to, well, I shouldn't say that. I do like some guy and guitar music, but you know, anyway. I prefer a band. Let's just say that. And so this song's really great. You know, what's also interesting is, you know, it's Dead Soldiers on the Table. Dead Soldiers being a reference, I think it's a reference to Empty Bottles, right? And then there's this reference to Empty Bottles in The Bamboo Shoots, The Fox Has Gone to Ground. So, hey, there you go. See, look at that. I'm bringing it together. Bringing it all together, folks. Bringing it all together. And so yeah. This song actually was in a different place on the mix CD, but I just couldn't make it work there. I didn't like it there, so I moved it to here, and it actually works a lot better, I think. And I don't know why I put the next song on, actually. I guess it was a bit of a palate cleanser. I just wanted something that was so different from everything else that I'd put on up to this point, and so I chose this song. It's by a guy named Taylor Hollingsworth, and, well, you'll just hear it, and you'll kind of hear what it is, but you won't know why I put it on.
Gonna skin and bones. You leave me bruises, leave me cuts, leave me out in the cold. I say, how can you love me? Then just leave me alone. I keep coming back, I keep coming back. I say, how can you love me? Then leave me alone. I keep coming back, I keep coming back. Make up your mind, either love me or leave me behind. But don't come around until you get it all figured out. Stop, stop coming around.
Kind of an interesting take on a pretty common sound, rock sound, you know, the train engine drums, you know, it's a very spare sound with this, the organ and then his guitar playing. And I think it's pretty good. I don't know if he's done very much besides this album. I know he's played with Connor Oberst, aka Bright Eyes, and done some stuff with him, and he's played with some other singers on their albums, but and I think he's put out one album, Bad Little Kitty or some kind of name like that, but maybe that song's from this. I'll be honest, I got this song off an uncut comp, and I liked it a lot, so I put it into my iTunes, and where I can hear it. So and now you've heard it, and I hope you liked it, because it was kind of interesting. And so we're getting near the end, everybody. I hope you're not totally bored and still listening to the show. I'm sorry. I know we're missing Ian. Ian would have made this show 400 times better, but you know, he couldn't be here today. So let's finish up. Let's finish strong, guys. Let's finish strong. So we're here in the end, and this is where I had some problems. Actually, this is another problem I had. This song actually was the final song in my original way I had done the CD. And I realized, mixtape, I realized that it didn't work. It didn't, for whatever reason, it's the final song on the first record. It's the final song on their record, on the band's record. This is the Crying Shames. They had a minor hit. They had a minor hit with the song Sugar and, the Searchers song, Sugar and Spice, written by Tony Hatch, who also wrote like Downtown for Petula Clark. Downtown, and Don't Sleep in the Subway, you know, those kind of songs. But yeah, Sugar and Spice, which was a big hit for the Searchers everywhere in the world except for the United States. For some reason, they didn't catch on there. And so the Crying Shames took a cover of that and had a fairly large hit. It was in the top 50 or whatever. And so they got signed to Columbia and did a few albums. And so they did this album called The Scratch in the Sky. And it's okay record. It's not like the greatest thing ever. But this song is really great. It's really kind of an interesting song. It's called Little Town I Used to Live In. And it's really kind of interesting. I'm going to start playing it from the beginning. And I'm going to kind of play a few little parts of it for you, because I think it's quite interesting. And quite an interesting song, actually. And it's kind of one of those songs where you're like, kind of comes out of nowhere, right? Like, how come this band did this song? I only have this record. I don't really have any other records by them. I don't know if their next record had this kind of sound, or if this was like this weird one-off, because it's not, what's the word I'm looking for? It's not the same as like on the record. It's not the same sound. It just kind of stands out on its own. But anyway, let's just listen to a bit of it.
There's a town I'd like to go back to, where the grass is greener still, and the roses bloom in the morning as the sun pours over the hill. And the little children are laughing while throwing stones in the pool, and the waves wash out to the shoreline as the children walk to school. Always will.
Interesting, right? And also, the warm sound of analog. Yes. I actually recorded this album and put it onto my, recorded it, and then recorded it in Audacity, and then put it into my iTunes as an MP3. I've done that with a few records. I tried not to use those songs for when I was doing these, but whatever reason, I just used it for this one. I guess I could have probably found it on iTunes and bought it, but eh. So here, I'll just play a little bit of the guitar solo from later on, and I think it's really kind of nice. I always kind of like that sort of flamenco style guitar solos, kind of has a little bit of Spanish guitar sound to it. At least I think this does. Kind of reminds me a little bit of the guitar solo that I love so much in "Come Up and See Me, Make Me Smile," the Steve Harley Cockney Rebel song. So I'll just play a little bit of that. So yeah, it's interesting, right? Like just the sound of that song. It's really kind of fascinating how they've arranged it, and then it kind of goes on from there. I'll just play a little bit more of it. I don't know. Maybe I'll just play it from behind or behind us from behind. I'll play it from behind a curtain. I'll play it behind, and then you can kind of hear. I don't know if I'll play it behind. Anyway, I'll play a little different part of it anyway.
Could it be I'm only dreaming? Fantasy of my mind. Leave the real world behind me to blind me.
And what's interesting is like the end of the song. This is like the final song on the record. It just kind of goes into this weird kind of freak, like they're just kind of freak out. I don't know if I want to call that, but they're just like kind of they're doing a lot of like tapping the strings, tapping guitar strings, and then getting kind of like the kind of bird sounds and stuff like that. And that's all kind of happening. And it's really quite interesting. And then the very end of the song, it does this great thing where it finishes with this little hook, and it's kind of like, for me, it's kind of like the end of Led Zeppelin's Houses of the Holy, where it ends with the ocean. And I just love how the ocean ends. That song always makes me want to listen to the album again after I hear it, because I love the end of that song so much that for some reason, as a record listener, it always makes me want to, like, instead of playing the song again, which, it was tricky to do when you had a record. You could do it, but it was tricky. It was easier just to like start the record again and listen to that whole side, just so you could hear that the song of the ocean one more time. So we'll just play the end of this song, and then you can hear that. Isn't that interesting? Like, what, such a interesting end to that song. I don't know. I really like that song a lot. And you guys know what I mean when I'm talking about the end of the ocean, right? The Led Zeppelin song at the end of Houses of the Holy. Like, you know what? I'm gonna play the last minute and a bit of that song right now, just so you can hear exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
it's not, you know, it's weird. Like it, the beginning of the song is kind of, you know, this sort of punishing riff, you know, dun 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 dun. And then you get to that part of the song, and then it just switches gears and starts going to that kind of, you know, kind of almost rockabilly, you know, thing with the, it just really works so well. And I don't know, maybe it's just the fact that at the very end, you hear Robert Plant say, ah, it's so good. And then that makes you think in your mind, oh, you're right. You're right, Robert. That, it is so good. You're right. I have to put that record on one more time just to hear how good it is once more. Because, man, that song is the bomb. Okay, so, but that's not the end. That's not the last song on this CD. I know I'm paying a lot of attention to the ocean, but the final song is by a band called The War on Drugs, and it's a song called Red Eyes. And you know what? And I should not like this song, because it sounds an awful lot like Dire Straits to me. Like, the guy's voice is very Dire Straits-y. Very Mark Knopfler. I almost think that when he's singing, he's wearing a headband, although I've seen him play, so I know he doesn't. But it's a great song, and I just wanted a good song to end with, and so I chose this song. And let's just listen to it, part of it, and you'll see why I like it so much. And so you kind of have to imagine the end of that last song, end of the Cry and Shame song, the little town I used to live in, coming in, so ending, and then this song starting, all right? So imagine that. So we end with that little little hook at the end of that song, and then this song comes in. That sounds just like Mark Knopfler, right? I'm not kidding myself about this. I mean, to me, it sounds like the Dire Straits. I mean, it's got like the way the guitars play and the kind of keyboard washes and everything. It really has a kind of a Dire Straits-y sort of a sound, which, you know, in the past I would have hated. You know, I do have a couple of Dire Straits albums now, but, you know, when I was younger, of course, I associated them with the sort of music that was played on my mom and dad's radio station, and that just could not happen. I could not listen to music that was played on my mom and dad's radio station, and it took me a long time to get that past that kind of shitty attitude and, like, start listening to Steely Dan and stuff like that, which is really good. I don't care what my wife says. So anyway, so that song's got a nice driving beat, and I like that. I like the guitar, you know, the acoustic guitars playing away, and I think it's more, obviously, more than one acoustic guitar strumming away, and then you got a really nice, very simple drum pattern playing, and you know, I think in rock and roll, you know, usually simple is better. You know, I do like some complicated music, but mostly I like songs that follow a very simple style that, you know, that kind of rock music. I think the less is more. Less is always more, because you know you can play the fanciest guitar solo in the world, and if it's just has no feeling at all, if there's just no emotion to that playing, then it's meaningless, you know. So you need the feel to it, and that's what makes rock and roll great. That's what, I guess, that also is what makes jazz great. I mean, if you're just playing scales, if you're just playing jazz scales, then no one cares. You know, you've got to marry those. You got to marry that proficiency with emotion, and that's the same with rock and roll. But what's even better about rock and roll is you can marry that lack of proficiency with emotion and produce something that's great. And so, you know, we kind of heard that driving beat. So let's just listen to a little bit, kind of more in the middle of the song, where, you know, the song kind of breaks out of that pattern, and you know, so some electric guitars playing, and you know, it's a bit more interesting. Or not that it's not interesting in the beginning. It's a bit more. I keep saying interesting. What a boring word this has become. It's more exciting when, you know, you can kind of hear the dynamics take off. That's the word I should use. It gets more dynamic in that moment. You know, you build up you know, you use that regular strum, that drum, you know, the drumming, everything kind of is ticking along, and you kind of build up this expectation. And then, so when you want to go into the next stage, when you do, you know, it brings that extra level of excitement to it. So let's go to that moment. Let's go to a moment like that in the song, and we can hear that, and then we will call this done and dusted, I guess. So here's a little bit more of Red Eyes by The War on Drugs. So yeah, that song is great to me, and I think it's a great album that it's on. I just wish I could remember the title off the top of my head. I'm sorry. The band is The War on Drugs. The song is called Red Eyes, and I hope that I remembered to tell you the names of the songs as I was talking about them. I might have forgot a couple. What I'm going to do is I'm going to list them on the show description. So I'll just give a list of all it's like 20, 21 songs that are on this mix. So then you can kind of follow along there if you want, or if you want to know what songs they are, then you'll know. They'll be right there for you to read. And that'll be cool. And so that's the end of the mixtape. We've reached the end of the show, everyone. I hope you're happy that we're at the end. It's been a really long show. I'm sorry it's been so long. I didn't intend to talk quite this long. But, oh yeah, the other neat thing, of course, is that it ends with Red Eyes, ends with War on Drugs. And, you know, when we're, you know, it's not a mixtape, so it's not going to just, you know, reach the run out and stop. It's, you know, it really actually is a CD. So if you're listening in your car, it most likely will repeat. And so it's kind of important that this song also kind of runs back into the first song, so Red Eyes, and then it kind of ends with that, you know, and then Fanfare starts. I think it's actually a pretty good, like, kind of a good transition from that to that too. That's one of the things I always try to find when I'm doing these things, is like this, that perfect transition from song to song. Sometimes you can find it, sometimes it's perfect, and it makes you so happy. You know, when I used to do mixtapes, I used to time it perfectly, and I would even take songs off if they didn't reach that point at the end of the tape, just so they would just stop just before the tape ran out and it went into the runoff, and then the tape would end. I just loved it when it would just be so close that the song would end and then the tape would run out. It just made me so happy. So sometimes you had to kind of juggle the songs at the end of the tape to make it work. And I did that with this as well. All the mix tapes that I've done, all the CDs that I've made, have all been 120 minutes. And so as long as I was at 120 minutes, I was super happy with the mix. Not just the songs and stuff like that, but also the fact that it had to work out to be 120 minutes. So, for instance, this mix, let me see, did it actually work out to be 120 minutes? It's not. It's 118. I cheated on this one. I'm sorry. But it was such a good mix. I couldn't bring myself to take a song off to try and stretch it out. So that's what you get. That's what you get, whoever's getting this one. Sorry, it's 2 minutes short. I'm jipping you, terrible person. And that's it, guys. That's the end of this mixtape episode. I hope it was fun, and I'm sorry that Ian wasn't here with us. You know, I really missed his input, his jokes, and his insight, and his keeping the ball rolling, and all the other things he does that makes the show so good. That's what we missed today. I'm sure you'll all feel like I was one leg walking rather than two. I'm really okay with him not being with us. I just want him to have some time to, you know, to go through what he has to go through, for him and Pia to support each other and be there together, and just kind of work through what's happening right now. When Ian comes back, I'm sure he'll talk about it. I don't want to talk about it for him. And so, yeah, that's the end of the show. I did it. I did it all on my own, all on my lonesome. It's solo Dave. From now on, I'm going to do solo albums too. Yes, if you want to write to us, if you have comments about this episode, like Shut Up Dave, bring Ian back, you're allowed to say those things, I guess. You can tell me that on our Facebook page at Sneaky Dragon. You can go to our website, to the comment board. You can talk to me there. Tell me, never do this again. You're welcome to do that. Sneaky Dragon at www.sneakydragon.com is our website. Ian says I don't need the www, but it's on the top URL thing, right? It's on the line, so I'm going to say it. And you can also write to us privately via email, sneakyd@sneakydragon.com, and you can go to our semi-defunct website that, you know, whenever we do something with it, we open it up, moths fly out. You can see us there, at sneaky_dragon. And we also have a Tumblr page. If that's your medium of information getting, we have a Tumblr page. And that's all for the show this week. So next week, hopefully Ian will be back. But like I say, if he can't, I'm fine with that. But for sure, if I'm going to be by myself next week, I'm not going to be by myself. I'm going to have a guest host come in so that I have someone's eyes I can gaze into deeply, gaze into uncomfortably, so that I know when I'm being a bore. Because, you know, it's nice when Ian's with me, I can stare into his eyes. And I know that, you know, it's time to change the topic because he's falling asleep. I can see him, like, starting to nod off. And I'm like, oh, better stop telling the same story that I've told a million times about that girl in her truck. So no more of that story. I get it. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. We love you all. And we'll see you next week. Bye now. Oh yeah, and happy Thanksgiving to all you Canadian sneakers.